Hey team, Richard Tubb here with a very special episode of Tubb Talk, the podcast for managed service providers. Now, if, like me, you're a productivity geek, then our guest today is somebody you are very likely to be familiar with. David Allen is the author of Getting Things Done, the best-selling book that spawned the GTD movement, which is now a part of daily life for millions of people all over the world. I personally refer to David as the godfather of modern productivity, and he's got 40 years plus experience as a management consultant and executive coach, and they have earned him the titles of personal productivity guru by Fast Company and one of the top five executive coaches by Forbes magazine. And make no bones about it, David is a personal hero of mine, something I've told him in person, but he's somebody whose wisdom has literally changed my life. And the last time we spoke to him on this podcast was all the way back in episode 50, which was a big milestone there. So it's wonderful to have him back on as a guest. David, welcome to Tubb Talk.
Hey, delighted to be here again, Richard. Thanks for the invitation. Sure.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. So good to see you again. And you and I caught up for dinner a few weeks ago in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. And we were there with Faith and Brian, Heather from Goes Into, my wife, Claire, as well. Before we jump into GTD, getting things done, some people may not be aware that you now live in the Netherlands. So do you mind sharing what prompted that move from the USA?
We wanted to leave the USA.
Not really,
not because of anything we didn't like. I mean, we love the U.S. and, you know, you can't denigrate the rungs of the ladder that got you where you are. So, you know, that was great. But we needed to change. And the U.S. mindset was just so, and, you know, my work was becoming much more global. And Catherine and I, my wife and I, are much more sort of globally oriented people. So we said, and we saw people slightly older than us looking a lot more sedentary than we wanted to be. So we said, you know, maybe it's time to throw a dart and, you know, push ourselves out of our comfort zone and have an adventure. So we could have moved anywhere. And by the way, you know, Obama, whom we love, was still president. So it wasn't like we were trying to get away from the politics, although now glad we're here instead of there. But so it could have been anywhere as long as there was a good airport. So it could have been Copenhagen, could have been Milan. We love Copenhagen. We love Milan. We love Stockholm. We love London. We love Kyoto. You know, it was just a little far away from everywhere, so not there. So we figured Europe would be more of an adventure than London, because, and the Netherlands, we've been to a couple of times. We've been to Amsterdam, which is, as you know, an eye candy city anyway. And we said, you know, that's about as far north as Catherine wanted to go. If you go to Copenhagen or Stockholm, it gets a little dark and a little cold for a long period of time. So Amsterdam just was sort of a perfect storm of a lot of the factors that we really liked and we really loved. We love the culture, we love the country, we love the people, we love the style, the practicality, the, you know, a lot of good things. And it's still, though, the Netherlands has its problems like everybody does in terms of right-wing populism and so forth, but wouldn't choose to be anywhere else right now, given all of those things going on. So that's a kind of a short version of a long story of us. And, you know, my work was becoming so much more virtual and global anyway, that we didn't need to be tied anywhere. And we don't have much family at all left in the U.S. And we just unhooked everything. So we're now permanently, we bought an apartment, renovated a lovely apartment here in Amsterdam. And so we're here to stay as far as we know.
It's just such a beautiful part of the world. On a personal level, I'm thrilled because you're like 50 minutes away now, so I can just hop on a plane across and catch up with you and Catherine anytime I want. But you mentioned, talking of planes, I want to share this quick story. You said you wanted to live anywhere near an airport. You shared with me once, because you're not far from Schiphol Airport, obviously, but did you get from Schiphol to your front room from landing in a plane in like 22 minutes or something like that?
Yeah, you can. Okay, but we actually prefer the train. You know, Eurostar is fabulous, you know, here in London. So,
crazy though, from landing to your front room. And I know you've moved since that story, maybe a little bit further, a different area of Amsterdam, but like 22 minutes or whatever. I mean, that's got to be a world record.
Something like that. Yeah.
Well, let's get down to business. So GTD, I mentioned, has been a life-changing book, not only for me, but for like millions of people worldwide. And I mentioned we were at dinner recently. You shared a project with me that is now complete. And I think you're in a position to share it with us and to share the world. So tell us about your new book.
Well, there was a big gap, Richard, over all these years. People would be trained personally in terms of best practices with getting things done, and then have to walk back into teams and environments that were dysfunctional. And then they had to use their own personal productivity to build fences around the dysfunctionality that was going on around them. And I never, you know, everybody would get, oh, God, why doesn't everybody around me get GTD? It would make life and work so much easier. And I never had the bandwidth to really figure out how to do that because it's so unique. You know, teams are so different in terms of what they're doing and who's in it and their experience and what's working and what's not working. So I didn't really have a model for that. So, you know, as you know, Ed Lamont and I hooked up. We had lunch about 3 years ago, I guess, in Amsterdam. And we were talking about this gap. And Ed's got a lot more miles on his tires than I do in the last 10 or 15 years in working with senior teams and global companies who've been trained in GTD and then watched how that affected their culture and the people around them. And so we said, okay, let's see if we can create a manual about what we would do. And surprisingly, it turned out that as we were writing this, and it was a strenuous process, just, and Ed did most of the heavy lifting and trying to figure out how do we script this? How do we frame this? Because it's so wide ranging in terms of the best practices that a team could use or not use, or the function and dysfunction. So, you know, we worked hard on that. And, you know, it turns out that most of the best practices of getting things done apply to teams. So a lot of what the new book is about is, okay, what that would look like. If you took the five steps of how do you gain control, which is capture, clarify, organize, reflect, and engage, and applied that to a team, what would that sound or look or feel like? And if you took the horizons, the six horizons of commitments we have, purpose, vision, goals, areas of focus and responsibility, projects, and next actions, how would those apply to a team? We really unpacked all of that in a lot of detail with this. And then, of course, the natural planning model, which is kind of a big sleeper inside of getting things done, you know, but how do you approach a project or a situation and get clear, you know, about that? So we took those three basic models of getting things done and then expanded those or applied those to a context of how would a team do this? And it's not like, oh, this is a nice to have. No, this is how a team that's a high performance team really, really functions, is doing versions of these various practices. So they're not like a new foreign language or a new technology. They're really a reminder of the best practices that go on when a team really functions. Anyway, so they're kind of a long story.
Yeah.
That's
no. So it was like, so the title of the book is GTD for Teams.
No, the title is Team.
Team.
T-E-A-M. Yep. And the subtitle is Getting Things Done with Others. Getting so you don't done. Have to be a GTD-er to get huge value out of this book.
Yeah.
We do add an appendix at the end of the book about what the heck is GTD anyway, since we refer a lot to the principles there, but not required. These are all really just best practices of high-performance teams.
And so it's not a sequel. I mean, I know there was other books in between there as well, since it was 2001, wasn't it? GTD was that. I can still remember reading it. I've got multiple copies of the different versions that came out, including the revised one. But so this is not a sequel per se. And I want to say, for the benefit of the audience, like, if you're not familiar with GTD, A, where have you been? Because this thing specifically in the IT industry has just, like, you know, been a life-changing movement for so many people within managed services within the IT industry. And perhaps we'll talk a bit about why that is shortly. But one of the things that's always occurred to me, I've had this conversation with you and so many other GTD practitioners, is those of us who have adopted getting things done tend to get frustrated, for want of a better word, that our friends, our family, our colleagues, who we look at and think, wow, you really need to read GTD, you really need to get on board, but they're the least likely to adopt GTD. So I guess, why do you think that is? And how do you see this book helping not just GTD for teams, but spreading GTD effectively, you know, for friends, family, and others?
I don't know why. You know, I think most people think they're okay and they're already busy enough. They don't need anything else to add to their life. So I think that's probably the main reason, is just people's comfort with their comfort zones, about where they are. And they're willing to tolerate what they're doing and not knowing there's another game that they could play without a whole lot of effort that would make a huge difference. So I've tried for 40 plus years, Richard, to figure out, how do I market this? How do I tell people about this? And, you know, we've done good enough to get me where I am right now and make a career out of this, but it's still kind of an unknown how you would get people to do it. Because as you probably know, the people most attractive to what I've come up with are the people who need it the least.
Yeah.
They're already the most organized. They're already the most aspirational. They're already the most positively focused. They're already the ones that know the value of being organized. They know the value of being of systems, because it all got them where they were, and they know they could create value because that's why they're where they are. The problem is they're out of room. They've run out of space.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the biggest issue is, wow, I could probably do so much more if I didn't have meetings I had to go to and emails I'd have to tolerate and all kinds of dysfunctionality, you know, going on, you know, all over the place.
How do you think we get the word across to them then in that situation? Because I've got to tell you, Dave, there's been times, I've told you this in person, where, you know, I've had a colleague or a friend or whatever who are disorganized, and I just want to hit them over the head with the GTD book and say, come on. But that's not likely to work. What is, in your opinion?
I, you know, again, I don't know, Richard. I wish I had this, but I'm not a marketer. I'm not, you know, my job was basically a researcher and then an educator about the model, whether people adopt it or not, or use it or use any of it. That's not my game. I'm not a motivational speaker. You know, people get motivated oftentimes when I talk about my stuff, but that's because basically I think it provides them hope. What I sell is hope. Oh my God, there's a way out of this, guys. You can actually surf on top of your game instead of feel buried by it. And it's not so much an issue of overwhelm. I think if people were in overwhelm, they'd handle it, you know, just to get out of the overwhelm. The real issue is what I refer to as ambient anxiety, that subliminal gnawing, nagging at you, that there's probably stuff you should be doing, should be thinking about or whatever. But most people are trying to use their head as their office, and your head's a crappy office. You know, it's just, yeah. Cognitive science has now proven here that basically the number of things you can actually keep in your head and still manage, remembering, reminding, and managing relationships with them is 4. That's it. As soon as you've got more than 4 things on your mind about things that are going on, you should do, need to take care of, need to handle, or whatever, you won't be able to take a test as well. You won't be able to be as present with your kids as well. You won't be able to be present with yourself as well, which happens to be the sort of the more high-performing state, is when you have nothing on your mind except whatever you want on your mind. You know, but people were waked up at 3 o'clock in the morning, oh God, I should have, oh, did I, or whatever. And all that stuff is just stuff I discovered 40 years ago. Your head's for having ideas, but not for hanging on to them. Now the cognitive science scientists and researchers have proven that. So I guess finding people that think that there's that it could be better, that they could have freer space. I guess, you know, one of my best sales techniques is just, if I were trying to sell anybody on this, is just, what would you do if you had clear space in your head? There was nothing tugging at you. What if you had actually room in your brain with nothing distracting or bothering you about your life or your work? What would you do with it? Be creative, be strategic, be more loving, be more of service. And, you know, all the people around the world who've adopted GTD do all of that, or some portion of that. Some people want to be more creative, some people more strategic, some people more just more present, more loving, some people more of service. So all those are the golden goodies, but they don't show up by themselves. You don't need time to be strategic. It doesn't take any time to have a good idea. It doesn't take any time to be creative. It doesn't take any time to be strategic. Those don't require time, but what they require, room in your head. So you have the freedom to point your brain and your attention where you want it, or to be open to the muse, because the muse is fickle. She comes in and comes out very fast. And so if you want the value of what the muse may have presented to you, you better capture, you better then clarify, you better then organize the results. In other words, these are behaviors that support creativity, innovation, strategy, et cetera, et cetera.
And I get a lot of, and again, a public thank you to you. I get so many lovely messages from people within the IT industry who say, wow, you're a like prolific content creator. And they say, you're one of the most organized people that I know. Friends and family say that to me. And I go, I'll let you into a little secret here. I'm because of this, because of GTD. So firstly, thank David Allen. But secondly, I'm this organized because at heart, and I say this with tongue in cheek, I'm a lazy, lazy man. And I just want life to work. And you've mentioned this to me more than once, that this was born out of the fact you're so productive because you just want an easy life. You just want your head to be free to do this stuff.
Well, people meet me, Richard, and I don't know, maybe you experience that too. They say, God, you're nothing like David. I thought you were going to be. They read the book. They thought I was going to be corporate, buttoned down, anal retentive, tight ass. I don't think I'm any of that.
You are not.
And so people go, well, you're more spontaneous. I like to follow my spontaneous, intuitive inclinations. I plan as little as I can get by with. And the reason I came up with getting things done was it allowed me to do that more in spades. So, you can relate, I guess.
Absolutely, I can relate. And talking to good people, I know your co-author, Ed Lamont, from his extensive productivity knowledge, you know, Ed and I, in fact, it was with Jake, his dog. We talked productivity walking on the banks of the River Thames a few years ago. And we went out for what was supposed to be a 20-minute walk and came back like 2 hours later.
We did the Riverside Cafe, which was lovely.
But we did that. But what made Ed your choice as co-author on this book?
Well, it was a mutual decision. I thought there's probably no better person to write this than Ed with me. And, you know, it's my intellectual property. So that, you know, that kind of goes into all of that. And Ed's, you know, a huge GTD fan and advocate and proselytizer, you know, essentially over many years. And we were great friends. So it was like, well, who else? And it turns out Ed's a brilliant writer and a thinker as well.
Yeah.
And so why not?
Absolutely.
It was almost like just, I wouldn't say total serendipity, because it's been on my mind for a long time. It's like, how do we fill that gap? How can we help people that say, God, how can we get people around me to get this?
How do you feel when, you know, I talked about, I in the IT industry, I talk openly about GTD changing my life, you know, Ed's, you know, started off as a GTD advocate and, you know, now co-authoring a book with him. There's so many people like us that go out there and will, I don't mean it to sound religious, but spread the word about GTD. How do you feel about GTD becoming a movement that's changed so many people's lives?
Oh, well, I just feel graced. And somehow the powers that be gave me the opportunity to uncover something that does nothing but improve people's lives, and then trying to figure out a business model and a career so I could distribute that to as many people that might want it. So I go, thank you, thank you, thank you, you know, whoever to thank, you know, that I just had that opportunity to take advantage of the opportunities that showed up and the ways to try to manage that over the process. But, you know, it wasn't necessarily an easy trip. But yeah, it was. I couldn't do anything else. I mean, if suddenly everybody got GTD, who was ever going to get it? And I had to find another job, I'd just go wait on tables in a good French restaurant.
I don't doubt that. And you'd enjoy it. You'd enjoy it too, as well.
I know. That was one of my favorite professions, you know, being a waiter.
Yeah. I mentioned I recalled reading GTD when it was first released. 2001, I think I'm right in saying it. Yeah. And yeah, read the revised version of things. Obviously, since 2001, we're recording this in 2024, technology, the world has changed, you know, beyond measure. And we're in the midst of another societal change with artificial intelligence, things of that nature. We'll talk more about that. But are there any tools or platforms that you recommend for GTD enthusiasts today? Or are you still of the firm belief that this is, you know, platform agnostic? You can use it with pen and paper, technology, or anything in between?
Anything that manages lists that you're willing to input to and access. So, you know, I know high-tech people that have gone back to paper planners.
Yeah.
But because they hate clicking 5 times to put something into something and to see something, they'd rather have it right in their face immediately. Now, digital or analog or or whatever it is, they all have a downside, but they both have an upside. So my capture is pretty much low tech, pen and paper. You can't beat them. No Wi-Fi required, no whatever. So that's how I keep my head empty. No batteries, none of that. But that's not my organizational system. You know, it's nice to have an organization system where you can connect and the dots and link to lots of different things around what you're collecting in there. So, you know, I've moved to just using the to-dos, the tasks inside of Office, 365 for Microsoft. You know, I mean, there are so many GTD champions inside of Microsoft that they've been, I think they've affected some improvements, over the years, but it's still, they're just buying little pieces of things and trying to then cobble them together to see how you can do that. So there's no simple, easy answer to any of that.
Yeah. I guess with the rise of notifications, digital distractions, how do you suggest people leverage technology to enhance the productivity rather than detracting from it? Because I'm a pen and paper guy as well, but yeah, obviously I'm a tech geek. I use a ton of tech, but thanks to your knowledge, I've learned what works for me, what doesn't work for me. But for the general, a lot of people listening to this, primarily tech people, they're going to be drawn to, I'm going to call it productivity porn, tech porn. You know, they just want to use the tools to do things. So how do you recommend?
We think the tool is going to solve it. The tool solves nothing.
Yeah.
It's the thought process that knows how to use the tool. If you have the right GTD or getting things done thought process, what am I trying to accomplish here? What's the next step? Where do I park reminders of things that I can't finish in the moment? Duh. I know it's a big duh. But that's really all you need is something that allows you to do that and allows you to do that on the fly. So, there's nothing wrong with people that just enjoy the tech. You know, why not? Just go explore how many different things you want. But if you keep thinking the tech is going to solve this for you and give you a clear head, think again. Add some more tech. You're going to add a lot more projects to your life. Try to figure out how the frig to do it, how to use it. Right? Because the heuristics are not automatically built in. Trying to use Asana or trying to use Teams or trying to use Slack or trying to use any of that, the heuristics, they've got the capability, if you have the right heuristics, to be able to use it very well. But if you don't, it's just going to create more frustration than relief.
And how do you think the principles of GTD will adapt to future technological advancements? So I mentioned AI, machine learning. There's more that we can't even think about at the moment. How do you think GTD will adapt to that?
Well, basically AI and all that, from everything I've seen so far, it can project is decision support. Cool. Hey, your mom's birthday coming up. What have I ever bought for my mom? What would a woman of that age really like to have? What's your favorite color? And AI could then accumulate all that and curate all that for you, but it won't buy it for you. You're still going to have to curate whatever it generates, which is cool. That's great. Okay. Here, AI just generated this email that's a lot more informal than I like. That's more for somebody who does X, Y, and Z. And I go, great. You're still going to have to edit that email, right? You're still going to have to curate that. But why not? Cool. Well, that was like the spreadsheet and the word processors, hugely bumped productivity for virtually everybody on the planet who has a computer.
Yeah.
But AI, I'm not sure will be quite as transformational as those two apps in terms of what it would do. But again, decision support. What should I, could I, might think about in writing this proposal or in doing X, Y, and Z? And, I've got a number of heavyweight GTDers who've been trying to use the AI, ChatGPT and so forth to say, how do I do a good weekly review? Or what's the best way to do X, Y, and Z? Or is my weekly review really up to date? Yeah. If all that was accurate or whatever, I'd go fine. See, after years, I said, I assume that at some point you walk into a room and it goes, oh, hi, Richard. It's Friday afternoon. It's 3 o'clock. You usually like a beer at 3 o'clock at Friday afternoons. You want one? And you go, yeah. And then it opens the fridge or orders one for you or whatever. Yeah, and that's great. And you go, no beer right now. I need to do X, Y, and Z. So, you know, the robotics of being able to use AI to support you in, you know, in multiple contexts and timeframes and situations. Yeah, very cool. But no different than how the car transformed the world, or the railroad, or the steam engine, or, you know, how many other things out there that actually created a whole different planet based upon what they provided for people to be able to do and use. So yeah, it's probably just another version of that.
I really think you're onto something there, because I was reflecting recently on, you mentioned the weekly review. For GTD enthusiasts, you'll know what we're speaking about. For those of a not GTDers, the weekly review is, in simplest terms, you know, making sure your inboxes are down to zero. But this is how I interpret it, David, perhaps you can correct me. But I look ahead 2 weeks in the calendar to what's coming up. Are there any landmines that I need to avoid? Are there any things I need to prepare? And then I look back a couple of weeks and say, oh, you know, that's a memory jog. Oh, I met with David. That reminds me I need to do this. So for me, it's just a routine, like a safety net that says, okay, empty your mind out, gives you the prompt. So AI in the future, as you say, you walk into a room, 3 o'clock, it says, hey, do you want a beer? But it could also be prompting you for some of the things that you know that you should do, but actually may have got sort of wiped away by the hustle and bustle of daily life.
Sure. Yeah. But you're going to have to be smart enough to figure out what of that you want to know when.
Right.
So it's not going to figure that out for you. Yeah. It may say, well, you know, for the last 43 Friday afternoons at 3 o'clock, you've had a beer. You know, chances are you're probably going to want one, right? Well, I think that's the best AI can do, unless it just automatically opens the fridge and, you know, shoves the beer out to you at 3 o'clock Friday afternoon because
it enables you. Yeah. And I think for the benefit of listeners, David, we're giving the impression that I always drink a beer at 3 o'clock. And I've got to say, some Fridays it's 4 o'clock. So there we go. Just put the record straight on that. Right. So, You mentioned something earlier that your work now, obviously it's global, the move to Amsterdam, and you do a lot of this stuff virtually. Obviously, there's been a huge shift towards remote work. So have you seen any significant changes in how people are applying GTD within their team structure because of the move to remote working, because of the move to doing things virtually?
Well, I think it demands, for many people, it's going to demand more of a thinking about how we're working together and what are our standards of how we work together. How are we communicating? How are we meeting? You know, who needs to be in that meeting? How clear are we about this? I mean, that's been age-old issues. You know, you go to a meeting, but you don't know why you're in the meeting. You don't know what the purpose of the meeting is. And, you know, it's like a waste of time. And most executives who complain, meetings and email are the things that are eating them alive. But quite frankly, those are symptoms. They're not the cause. There's symptoms of teams not being clear about the standards about how we work together. So a lot of the book that Ed and I have written is about the mechanics, the simple mechanics that are easy to fix, that if you don't fix them, though, they suck wind out of your ability for the team to do bigger and greater stuff.
Okay. Can you give us an example of one?
You know, we were coaching in the U.S. a very sophisticated financial management company in New York. And once they all sort of got coached and got the sort of GTD thing, they made a policy that if you were invited to a meeting and the purpose was not clear and the role you were supposed to be playing by being in that meeting was not clear, you don't got to go. Right. That came from the top down. So that could change your culture, just that, to get people focused on purpose and action. So a lot of meetings are just a lot of talk, a lot of talk, a lot of talk. You know, and the time's up. Oh, my God, I guess we have to meet again. You know, come on. Why weren't you clear about what the purpose of the meeting was, by what time? And before you end the meeting, what did you decide and who's going to do what about this? And as simple and duh as those questions are, there are an awful lot of teams that don't do that, or they avoid them until the last minute, or just, you know, inappropriately engage with that. So, you know, again, that's simple mechanics, that sometimes if those simple mechanics are done, then you get rid of the sort of ambient anxiety of the team. Oh, gosh, you know, did something fall through the cracks? I guess we have to meet again to find out what was, you know, what wasn't clear to begin with. And, you know, and that can exhaust a team, just those simple mechanics not being handled really well. So that's what we tried to address. What are the simple mechanics that need to be done optimally so that the team can focus on the cool stuff that it wants to get done?
Yeah, it's a huge problem.
They're only a team. You're only a team because there's some purpose. And that's true whether it's you and the taxi driver or you and the board of your startup. You know, it's like there's something that has you coming together in order to make something happen or to ensure something that happens.
It's a massive challenge. And I think one of the things I've observed is, of course, most of the world is still stuck in the, for want of a better word, the industrial mindset of you pay somebody to turn up for like 8 hours a day to be in the office to do the job. But when, you know, COVID and the pandemic and everything changed the world and we're never going back, which is now more and more, especially young people, they want to do things for a purpose. They're not worried about the amount of time they spend on it, little or most, but they're worried about the results that are generated. And so actually I see with a lot of people with meetings are pulled together because people don't know what it is they're trying to achieve. And so they pull together a meeting. If you can be clear about that, there's really no need for the meetings, or you can work asynchronously.
Correct.
Yeah
all that and all that can help a ton. And, you know, I've said this for years and I've known it for years, is that I could be really clear and have a nice clear head and be organized and focused. You, Richard, could be really clear and be organized and focused. But we get together, we want to try to do something together, we've just increased exponentially the complexity of our agreements. Well, are you handling that or am I? Are you doing this or what? And so even if we're both clear personally, as a group, it's you know, we use this, the metaphor, it's actually not a metaphor, it's an example of a soccer team or a football team. You need individual players who are really good, you know, at kicking and blocking and doing whatever they do. But they could be all great, but if they have never worked together as a team to know how to then collaborate and strategize as a team, they're going to lose. So you need both. You need the ability to be able to function together, but you need people who are functioning together to have their act together so that they can play well on the team. So you actually need both. You know, it's not one works, the other doesn't. No. You actually need both of those capabilities.
And I mentioned the primary audience of this podcast, the listeners, tends to be IT professionals, tech people, managed service providers. What advice would you give to IT businesses or tech companies in general looking to integrate GTD into their culture? And how can it help then improve the team's productivity?
I don't know. It'd be the same advice I give anybody or any company. It's no different. You know, tech companies just have a bunch of kind of cranky individuals that like doing what they're doing and close their door and write code and aren't bothered by anything else. But they still are going to have to engage with somebody who can read the code, or that they want to give the code to, or who okays the code or whatever. So, you know, a tech company is not going to get rid of the necessity to have a high performing engagement process with the people who are trying to get stuff out the door, get it soon out the door, and have a quality product that they're getting out the door. You know, there's nothing new about that. I mean, we wrote a whole chapter about the new work, where we went back and said everything from Deming, you know, uncovering the Toyota process and Kanban and all that, all the way to Scrum and Agile and all those things, which basically, you know, are, you know, all of those have fabulous things to do about improving the efficiency of workflow, of the external flow of work that needs to get done, no waste, essentially.
Yeah.
But they don't address the mental no waste, right? There's a good friend of mine who runs that now, if he calls it the Post-Industrial Institute, it used to be called the Agile Institute in California, Frode Odegaard, you know, a Norwegian guy. And he said, David, GTD is lean for the brain. It's like no waste. Why have a thought twice unless you like the thought, right? So, and not only that, people on Scrum teams or Agile teams or whatever, once they walk away from that Scrum or that Agile meeting, how are they handling what's theirs, what's not theirs? And how are they managing all of that in the process? So again, it comes back to the internal frame of mind that is required to make sure, as a knowledge worker, meaning the work is not self-evident, it's not a make or remove it thing. You got to figure out. No email tells you what to do with that email, or very few, right? you got to think, you have to think, you know, one of the things I say in my book is you have to use your mind to get your mind clear.
Mm.
So, which means you have to engage in a process, which many people find quite difficult. It's called think. No, it's true. Thinking is tough. Most people's, you know, mind is simply a reactive mechanism that's just reacting and responding to things as it's banging at them. And your mind is a wonderful servant, but it's a terrible master. And a lot of people still trying to use their mind to be able to master that. So this is sort of a little bit far afield from your question about IT companies and how they use GTD. But
no, I think
you know, that I'm so lazy. It's so great, Richard, that I came up with a career where I never have to change anything I say, no matter who I talk to.
Well, like me, we joke about being lazy, but actually what we're doing is being smart about our time. I mean, from the self-depreciation stuff, and I know where you're coming from, David, because we've had this conversation in person, but, you know, saying we're lazy, that's not the case at all. You've just found a really smart way to do things. So on that topic, I want to pick your brains on this and ask this. So we've come across the concept of decision fatigue. You know, if you're making decisions about things, and what we're talking about, information knowledge workers, is you're making a series of decisions all the way through, you know, supported by a framework such as GTD. But what do you do about decision fatigue? Does David Allen get to a point in the day where he's just like, okay, I'm spent, there's no more decisions left to do? How do you deal with that?
I drink and I meditate. Either one or both, you know, or stop and do nothing, take a nap. You know, come on, I just bought a four-wheel computer, a Tesla Y, you know, did a road trip through Spain, 6,000 kilometers. Jeez. At the end of the day, you know, you don't drink and then drive. What I do is drive and then drink. It's like, oh, I am so spent trying to make decisions about the highway and about which way to go and how to use the, what's on the computer and how do I, which button do I press to find out whatever. So, yeah, you need to rest, you know, and again, one of my favorite books is Teo Campanelli's The Brain, you know, Brain Chains. And Teo is this great researcher, you know, in Brussels, that, you know, his whole book is a big rant about you guys need to rest. There's a part of your brain that archives the stuff. And if you don't give it time to archive all the complexity that you just dealt with, that could be a nap in the afternoon. It could be making sure you get plenty of sleep at night. It could be a lot of different ways that you let the brain rest, where you just stop thinking. I mean, some of my most creative and fun stuff is when the dogs are asleep and my wife is asleep and I got a good glass of wine, you know, in my easy chair in our living room. And I just sit back and, you know, turn off the lights and there's no digital, there's no electronics. And I let my brain just go, David, relax, let it all go. And some of the coolest things have shown up in that time. But I don't force myself to, you have to think of something cool, David. No, I just go, let it go.
Yeah.
And so that sense of release or relief of the mental process and the decision-making process, I think is absolutely critical.
Couldn't agree more. And for me, like, meditation is one of those things where I give myself almost permission to stop. And then the monkey mind is working overtime, but then after a while it goes away. But yeah, that I'm concerned about society as a whole. We talked about AI and other things where we're finding more and more ways to be efficient, to be productive, but then we're just filling the time with more work. Does that make sense? That sort of a fit that I've got. So sure. You know, making time to actually.
I think that's been true from the beginning of knowledge work, or from the beginning of like, wow, how many things could I, should I be thinking about right now? I don't know that that's. I think that's probably, you know, what the digital world has done is add volume and speed to the inputs that people are allowing themselves to then try to consider. You know, if we were all writing handwritten letters, it took 3 weeks to get there to the Pony Express. Yeah, you had time to think. You had time to relax and decide how you wanted to respond. Now, boom, 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 it's at you all the time. So the ability to be able to respond rapidly, you know, it's a martial art.
It really is. And, you know, I've learned a lot of that from GTD. Last week, I spent a week away in rural Northumbria, little large, Claire and I went away. I finished writing a book that I've been procrastinating about for like 9 months. But again, it's not laziness. It's just you know, decision fatigue. You run out of fuel to do that unless you give yourself time to rest, the quiet time to actually focus on what's important. So, yeah.
Indeed.
So I also want to ask, GTD, technology companies, super, super popular. You know that, you know, you've spoken, as you said, Microsoft taken off like wildfire within there over many, many years. Why do you think GTD is so popular amongst, dare I say, techie geeks like myself?
They're as lazy as I am. It's so funny. You have such a hardworking industry about how to not work hard. You know, come on, every piece of software was developed to make things happen easier with less effort, right?
Right.
It's all about an efficiency, effectiveness, technology, period. So not only that, tech people love systems. They love a start, a finish, a complete. They like a model that has no leaks to it, you know, yay. And, you know, I think GTD was the first non-tech meme to hit the tech world back in, you know, the early 2000s, because it just spread around so fast because people go, oh my God. It also allowed people to use their favorite tool to do cool stuff with they weren't doing before.
Right.
So, oh, now I can use Excel to do this, or now I can use Word to do this, or now I can use Asana to do this, or Evernote to do this, or whatever. So whatever people, so it didn't force tech people to change their tech. It gave them clues to how to use the tech that they had available to them in a much more cool way. So I think all those were factors that had it hit a nerve.
And there's going to be some people listening to this. As I said, you and I discussed GTD at length back in episode 50 of Tub Talk, where you did me the honor of coming on. We celebrated. It was your birthday as well, I think, around the time as well. So what a birthday gift, speaking to Richard Tubb, eh? But yeah, for anybody listening to this who is perhaps not that familiar with GTD, I'd recommend go and listen to episode 50 of Tub Talk, where we discussed GTD. But for anybody who's also maybe taking it on board for the first time, what would you say are the common mistakes people make when they try to implement GTD? How can they avoid them?
The first biggest mistake people make, and very few people really understand this, is that they don't really capture everything.
Mm.
So they're still using their head to try to remember, remind, whatever, some things, and then they get stuff out of their head into some sort of a, you know, some sort of a captured place, and they don't trust either one, because neither one is complete.
Right.
So when neither one is complete, you don't trust either one. You think, well, this is too much trouble to write stuff down. So they don't. So then it all backs up back into their head. But even if they make lists, a lot of people then don't move to the next step and clarify and organize what's on that list. So they've just become list freaks. And they got lists stuck all over God and creation. And then that all that stuff then creeps back up into their head again. You know, and then a whole lot of people, you know, get inspired on a weekend and create a system, or they capture and they organize or whatever, but then they don't review and reflect and keep the stuff current. So, the stuff falls off the wagon because, it's not current. They don't trust it. They think it's too much work to try to keep it up. Or a lot easier to just do what I feel like doing whenever I feel like doing it. It's like, fine, just be zen about your life. Who cares? Just throw away your calendar. Don't be intellectually dishonest. If you don't think keeping stuff externally tracked, so your brain doesn't have to keep track of it, you know, and those are common mistakes that most people make that has them fall off the wagon or not even engage very much.
It blows my mind, David, sometimes when I speak to people, you know, people say, hey, you do the GTD thing, Richard. Tell me what it is, you know, give me the elevator pitch on GTD. And I say about, you know, your mind is great for creating ideas, but not for holding them. By the way, I want to say publicly, I get quoted on that line so much in the IT industry. For everybody listening, it was David Allen who said it. And it doesn't matter how many times I tell people in the MSP space, that wasn't my thing, that was David's, but there you go. So I'm publicly saying that. But yeah, it blows my mind when people say, well, that feels like a lot of work. And I say, well, you keep a calendar, right? Oh, yeah, keep a calendar. Well, why don't you just try to remember all the appointments that you've got and where you need to be and who you need to speak to? And they were like, well, that's crazy. I say, well, that's the way I feel about GTD. It's like trying to remember all of the to-dos, all of the things, everything else. Just get it out of your head. Well, as we come to the end of our time together, what's the one piece of advice that you would give to anyone listening to maintain focus and clarity of mind in a tech-driven world that is constantly demanding your attention? We're sitting here today. We've both been doing this a long time now. We've got our notifications turned off. We're focusing on enjoying the conversation with one another. That's not the case for everybody, though. So what advice would you give to people on avoiding distraction?
Relax. And trust your inner voice. People have sometimes asked me, David, what would you tell your 25-year-old person, you know, back then that you know now, you didn't know then? I would say, my intuition. Trust my intuition. Mm-hmm. I didn't know until my late 20s and early 30s about this whole idea of an intuitive voice inside of me that actually had, it was intelligent, it loved me, it was patient, you know, it had all the time in the world. It wasn't based in space and time. It was just when I decided to stop and ask it, what should I do now? There was an answer. And it took me a while to recognize that and to learn to be able to trust that. I still work to trust that, you know, what's the best thing I should do right now? And I think there's a part of all of us that knows that, but the problem is most people have so many things they haven't captured, clarified, organized, or whatever. Their head's just such a jumble of ambient anxiety, they couldn't tell the difference between intuition and indigestion. You know, does this feeling mean I should do this, or is this too much chili I had for lunch? I don't think a lot of people have enough clarity to be able to then give themselves space to figure that. But you don't need a lot. All you have to do is stop. So all the mindfulness stuff people are doing these days, and any kind of meditative technique or reflective technique where you stop and just shut the world down and say, okay, let me listen to, you know, whatever. See, the universe is always on. Meditation is not like you're stopping the world. No, it's like you're quieting some part of you so you can hear another part of the world, another part of the universe that's always on and always available and always accessible. Could have fooled me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've said so many times, and hopefully I've said it enough times to you as a friend as well, how much you've inspired me with, you know, the life-changing book and everything else. Who inspires David Allen? Where does David Allen go for inspiration nowadays?
Intuition. You know, I've had enough experience in my spiritual explorations to know that there's a whole big crowd out there that I can't see that are my support team, you know, in the invisible realms. And they provide more inspiration than anything else. And, you know, lots of good books. I read a good book about every month, whatever, that I get inspired. Something in that book inspires me. So, there's a lot of stuff out there that, you know, helps along the way remind me about stuff that I should have remembered. But now, oh, thank you for reminding me about that. That's a cool thing. Sure.
The spiritual stuff, I, at the risk of terrifying or alienating some of our audience here, I do know my audience, but I'm on a very spiritual journey myself, so I'd love to talk to you about that at some point in the future. But in terms of books, more sort of prosaic stuff, what's a book that you've read recently that's inspired you that you'd recommend to our listeners?
Well, I can't remember. It's not what I read recently, but it is a book I read, and I keep recommending it to anybody.
Humankind.
Yeah.
And who's the author of that, David?
Rutger Bregman.
Rutger Bregman.
Yeah, he's actually Dutch, but it's a fabulous book. And it's really about, you know, seeing humanity from a positive perspective, that people are actually very kind and nice at heart. And there are so many examples where the press has just, you know, ridden roughshod over the good news about how people really are kind with each other. And they try to, like, you know, they try to make spectacle and they try to make, you know, stuff that tends to cover up, you know, how good people are, you know, when forced, you know, to help and to be of service. And, you know, it's a great book. Anyway, so you ask. That's
thank you. We will include that in the show notes and everything else that David and I have spoken about today. So teams, I'm going to get the subtitle wrong here. What was it? How to implement GTD within your organization? Help me out here.
Yeah, pretty much.
Close enough.
Well, basically, it's like, you know, GTD is not a cult. GTD is just a recognition of the principles that really work in terms of how things work And so it's really applying high performance principles. And, you know, a lot of the theme of our book is, and I have to, you know, attribute, you know, Ed for this framing of it. He says it's healthy high performance. Healthy means sustainable. You're not burning people out. It's a positively functioning, you know, enterprise and endeavor. High performance means you're actually producing results that, you know, fulfilling the purpose of your team, what you're trying to do. And you could have one or the other. You could have high performance and burn people out, or you could have a kumbaya, we love each other, but not get anything done. Right? So you actually need the sort of combination of the two. And that's what we tried to put together in this manual. You know, how do you make sure that you have vision and manifestation?
Well, Teams and Getting Things Done with Others by David Allen and Ed Lamont is published on the 21st of May. By the time you're listening to this podcast, it'll probably well go, you know, the podcast will probably already been published. I would hugely encourage you to go and check out this book. GTD, the original Getting Things Done, was a life-changing book for me. And I'm pretty sure this book between David and Ed is going to be similar as well for millions and millions of teams across the world. David, I know it makes you blush, but you're a personal hero of mine. Thank you for the impact that you've made on my life. Appreciate you. And Claire and I are looking forward to hanging out with you and Catherine at some point in the near future, be it in London, be it in Amsterdam or wherever.
Thanks, Richard. This was fun.
Thank you, my friend.
Hey folks, Richard here. Thanks for listening today. I know you've got a ton of options for who you listen to nowadays, so I really appreciate your support. Do you have any feedback on this episode? Ideas for future guests? Tweet me at Tubblog using the hashtag TubTalk. I respond to every tweet and really appreciate your feedback.